2 of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. 651-989-5855 is the phone number, or you can use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. One of our listeners tweeted during Sam's Top 5, Marvel movies got old years ago. So overdone. I did a fact check on that during the break. I found that to be false.
You wrong.
I found that to be inaccurate.
Yeah.
So you stop spreading fake news on the TCNT hashtag.
They need to, you know what needs to happen? The controversy has erupted because the dudes that are making this series of Star Wars movies, the Game of Thrones guys, they're two white dudes, right? This is freaking everybody out, irrationally freaking everybody out. You know, just don't put their pictures up. Just don't say who they are.
Right.
You know? Or you can just stop being irrational and looking through the racial lens. You can do that. Two, or you can wait until like the content actually comes out and then judge whether or not they were appropriate to go and make movies that.
I mean, that's ultimately what should matter here: the merit and the quality of the content being put out.
You didn't hire them. You don't know the process.
It's not like there's not a ton of diversity above them,
right?
You know, in the Lucasfilm, Disney, you know, sort of corporate structure, and their boss is a woman.
Yeah, the whole story group that approves all the storylines is made up of a Hispanic individual, two women of color, and a man of Asian descent.
Doesn't matter.
You know, and that doesn't even matter. I don't care. I just want people to love.
It doesn't matter to the social justice
warriors. No.
Yeah, they don't care.
Okay, no. So you gotta be careful. Just keep going.
You're worked up about this.
Well, there's a couple, because we have other stories that we'll talk about next hour. There's this fake Trump flyer that's going around, and then this High School Musical that got canceled because they dare go and cast Esmeralda from a girl who is apparently white. And then Duluth schools are talking about not making, or they're not going to make Mark Twain and To Kill a Mockingbird required reading for the students because of racial slurs in them. I'm tired of this happening.
God forbid you use those as educational opportunities. God forbid you use those as teachable moments. No. We can't have that.
Can we get back to normal corruption, please?
Dai Tao might be the most honest politician in the world because he just wears it right on his sleeve.
Yeah, man.
Like, he just don't care.
I love Skid Row and making fake ballots.
So, Dai Tao, who previously had a bribery a charge against him, now who was running for mayor of St. Paul at the time, was charged yesterday with unlawfully marking a ballot, misconduct in or near polling places, and unlawful assistance of a voter, according to a criminal complaint filed against him in Ramsey County District Court.
Oopsie.
First charge is a gross misdemeanor. The other two are petty misdemeanors. Tao's attorney says he was just trying to help a disabled senior get to the polls and vote for him.
your goodwill doesn't trump law. And your ignorance also doesn't trump law.
Yeah, so these allegations are made by an election judge who was working at the Martin Luther King Recreation Center on election day. The election judge said he witnessed as Dai Tao entered a voting booth with a voter and then appeared to help the voter fill out her ballot.
You can't do
that. You're not supposed to do that.
No. Here, let me help you fill in the little circle. Let me get that in. No, you want to do the one above the other one.
This, of course, comes on the heels of during the election season when the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension investigated allegations that Tao had solicited a bribe from a food container company lobbyist Sarah Clark. And if you don't know who Sarah Clark is, she's the wife of Minneapolis's mayor.
Oh,
Jacob Fry.
Oh, man child.
Yeah. No money had apparently changed hands in that exchange, so they declined to press charges. But he was basically saying, yeah, give me the money, and
yeah,
I'll do whatever it is you want me to do.
Yep. Using election records, the Hennepin County investigators were able to track down the voter, okay, who later told authorities that she had been outside her home when she and others were approached by a person she knew as Mr. Zong, according to court documents. Law enforcement has since determined that Mr. Zong was, in fact, Dai Tao, the complaint said.
Oh my God. He's got code names. You will call me Mr. Zong.
Tao then asked the group if they were planning to vote and offered to help, according to the statements the voter later gave to the law enforcement. The voter, who said she did not speak English, had poor vision and had never voted before, accepted Tao's help.
I wasn't planning on voting, but I guess I got time.
So Tal gave her a ride to the Martin Luther King Recreation Center polling location, and according to the legal documents.
Once there, he helped her register to vote and then accompanied her into the booth. Tal then read her each candidate's name and helped her mark the ballot because she had difficulty seeing the circles, according to the complaint. The voter added that despite his assistance, Tal never told her whom to vote for. It's probably more like, yeah, sure, I'll fill out the circle next to Melvin Carter. Yeah, trust me.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's right. What it says. Yeah, it's Melvin Carter right there.
Yeah,
sure.
She also says she didn't realize at the time that Tal was a candidate. Well, you wouldn't, because he's just saying that his name was Mr. Jean. Mr. Jean. Now, it does get a little, there, I don't want to say a gray area here, and this is when the attorneys speak, when you get into the rationale of why he did this. So state election law says voters needing assistance due to an inability to read English or physical inability to mark a ballot can bring a family member, friend, neighbor, or anyone you choose to help vote. The only exception, and this is where he screws up, the only exception is that you can't get help from your employer, your union, or a candidate for office.
I'm surprised unions made it onto that list.
Right.
I think they'd have wrote themselves out of that.
So I wonder, no, he still can't get around. I was trying to come with an excuse for Mr. Zhang.
Tal admitted to the allegations. His attorney said in a written statement that while Tal acknowledges that he did help someone vote, his actions were not in violation of the law. Their rationale is that the conduct of which Mr. Tal now stands accused is perfectly legal for virtually anyone in Minnesota, except for a candidate for office. It says it right there.
Yeah. That's where you tripped up.
Yeah. There is no allegation that Mr. Tal did anything intentionally wrong. That doesn't matter. Or that he did anything wrong other than help one elderly woman overcome disabilities so that she could vote. The statement goes on to say that the suggestion by authorities that Tal represented himself under a different name at the time were incorrect. Well, that's according to the woman that you filled out the ballot for.
Now, Drew, I will say this, and Sam, just so you guys know, I do think that Dai Tao does have a very clear defense in this, and because based off of this next statement, they should throw all the charges out. Dai Tao called the charges unfair in the same statement, adding that he's an Eagle Scout who dedicated his life to helping others. Well, you know what? We didn't know he was an Eagle Scout. So now, when he was an Eagle Scout,
Did he get the accept a bribe badge? Was that one of the badges that he got?
Well, no, he didn't. But Mr. Zhang did. I want to see what the name tag was.
Yeah, and he's trying to get out of this by saying that his intentions were good. He just had a disabled neighbor who wanted to vote, needed help, and he helped him. But the fact of the matter is that your intentions don't matter. The law is the law.
Yeah.
And if you violate it, you violate it. Colin in Minneapolis, good morning.
Yeah, hey, I just want to make a comment about you guys saying how the law is the law and intentions don't matter. In the post-Hillary Clinton non-indictment era, him, I'm assuming, being a Democrat and this being Minnesota, yeah, very well could get off entirely on it because rules don't matter when you got a D next to your name.
Well, you know what? I don't think you're that far off the mark, but for a completely different reason, okay? You get further into the story. A representative from the state court system has said no one has been charged under the statutes since as far back as Minnesota has been keeping electronic records. Now, I assume they will hold them accountable, but I cannot help but wonder whether or not they're going to let Mr. Zhang or Dai Tao break new ground as being the first one to get charged, or if they're going to keep the record of not ever charging anybody underneath this particular law. The Dakota County attorney did say, though, his good intentions, right, as Drew said, are moot, determining the legality of his actions. Under law, if you're a candidate for office, you can't assist another voter in the voting booth, and that's what occurred here.
And because they're just a gross misdemeanor, petty misdemeanor, it says here in the story that a conviction of the charges, if it does indeed come, would not provide legal ground to dismiss Tal from his seat on the St. Paul City Council.
It wouldn't?
That's what it says here. Would not. They're just misdemeanors.
Wait, we need
probably better. Needs to be a higher threshold.
Okay, well, we need to lower that threshold. just my opinion. I would think that something like this would be...
Probably just going to pay a fine.
Grounds for immediate... Oh, my God. Really?
That's my guess. If he's even convicted.
If he's even convicted.
If he's even convicted.
Yeah, Dai Tao don't care.
Dietau don't care.
He probably wants the conviction. Give it to me. I want it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
I'll just pay it off with that bribe I took. Or didn't take.
The alleged bribe.
Good for Dietau, man. Wear that corruption right on your sleeve.
Yeah.
Just own it.
I appreciate the honesty. He should turn himself into a superhero, Mr. Zhang. the most outwardly corrupt politician ever. He probably would continue to get elected, just for being honest, right? 651-989-5855. Let's go here. Met Council. Met Council announcing $5.2 million in grants to increase the Twin Cities supply of affordable housing. That's a lot of money for future squatting locations.
I don't think that's what they have in mind.
Oh, no? That's not.
I don't think.
Well, I don't think what they have in mind. It's what they're going to get. The livable communities funding is going to projects in St. Paul, Roseville, Minneapolis, and Minnetonka. It includes the former Pioneer Press building on Cedar Street in St. Paul, which has been converted into 143 apartments. The St. Paul site, $250,000 to renovate the newspaper's former building. Edison in Roseville will receive $248,000 to develop a mixed-income community for veterans and people struggling with homelessness. Okay, well, that's cool. Minneapolis is getting $2.9 million for their own projects. Each year, the Met Council awards $12 million worth of grants across the metro to clean brownfield sites and build affordable housing and mixed-use developments.
Yeah, because the private sector couldn't possibly handle this type of task.
Yeah.
Couldn't possibly react to market forces and provide housing of all different levels to whomever. No. You need the Met Council to do this.
For more than two decades, the Livable Community Grants Program has turned polluted land across the Twin Cities into fertile ground for economic growth and opportunity and invested in our local communities, said Governor Mark Dayton in his statement. Oh, they'll create 70 jobs and total 560 new housing units. So $5.2 million for 70 jobs.
Jeez. Wow.
Money spent.
Darren calling from Savage. Good morning, Darren. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys. Hey, you do have to have criminal intent for there to be a crime, because there is a thing called mens rea that you do have to have. And as the previous caller did mention, with the Hillary Clinton, I had no intent to commit the crime. Her getting off, you can use that as a defense, too, under the equal protection under the law clause of the Constitution.
Well, there's a level of intent that is required in some instances, but there's also the fact that, you know, ignorance of the law isn't necessarily a defense or an excuse.
That is true.
So, you know, it, that's where you get sort of your prosecutorial discretion as to how they want to prosecute certain crimes. In this specific crime, I don't think intent really matters. As a candidate, I think it is incumbent upon him to be aware of election laws and what he is allowed and is not allowed to do.
Yeah. You would think, by the very nature of what he was doing, he would have called it into question. Can I do this? Can he ask it?
Does he not have anybody with him?
No, it's Dietau. He doesn't care.
He don't care.
He just makes his own rules.
The honey badger of Twin Cities politics.
Oh, I'm sorry. He wasn't Dietau at the time. He was Mr. Zhang. I forgot. So Mr. Zhang's allowed to go and do
that. I don't know what you're talking about. Mr. Zhang is not a candidate. Mr. Zhang is not a peer on any of these ballots.
If Dietau were here, this would be a problem. But he's not. Clearly.
It's Mr. Zhang.
Mr. Zhang.
Mr. Zhang don't care.
No, doesn't give it all.
He ran out of
two of any. Doesn't give two of any. Give. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Hey, just real quick, in the time we have left before we talk to our next guest about the roller coaster of the stock market's been the past few days. Governor Mark Dayton, also out of the Pioneer Press. Wants Minnesota's congressional delegation to fight for the renewal of funding for health centers that serve rural communities and the poor. These are the statewide pay-what-you-want clinics, okay? So you go in, you get the service you want, and you just pay whatever it is you want to pay for getting the service.
Right.
The $3.6 billion fund that supports these community health centers across the nation expired. Congress has not reauthorized it yet. It could mean the 70 centers that serve 180,000 Minnesotans will lose the $27 million in funding this year. Dayton said, sadly, Congress has left long-term funding for this program in limbo since last fall, wreaking havoc on a system that serves Minnesota's most vulnerable families. He wrote in a letter to lawmakers, I think part of the problem here is that the people that are taking advantage of the services aren't paying enough in their pay-what-you-want scheme of getting the help that they need. The sidebar to this is, and it kind of goes back to a number of different times that we've mentioned this morning. Look, even if it did lose the funding, it's $27 million. I know it's a lot of money, but we don't know how generous the public can be and what private entities are out there who would be more than willing to step up to fill the funding gap if this funding were to be removed. And you're not going to be able to do that unless you remove the funding. I'm not saying Congress shouldn't reauthorize it, but I am saying that there is untapped private dollars, and Elon Musk is the example, for as weird as it sounds, are out there and be more than willing to help the vulnerable people in the community.
Losing this funding at the federal level does not mean an immediate death knell for these clinics and for these centers. I'm confident that we will be able to find a way to continue to provide these services.
We're going to be talking with the Senior Vice President of Financial Planning and at the Financial Engines, co-host of Investing Sense here on Twin Cities News Talk, Andy Smith. Dow suffered wild swings yesterday, recovered, and we'll get his thoughts. You know, hearing that it was good that we recovered, but not really good that we recovered, we'll break it all down with Andy next.
Justice.
Just after 7:30 this morning here on Twin Cities News Talk with Justice and Drew, along with Sam, we'll be talking with GOP Chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan. We'll get a caucus recap from last night. And also, at some point, we'll talk about, there's an article this morning, conservatives at the university fearful of protests, and how a lot of speakers, when they're brought to town to speak at the university, are having to be shuffled around, and it's all because of a catering to individuals who will be protesting these conservative speakers coming to campus. And so either later on this hour or next hour, we'll be talking about that.
Joining us now, however, Senior Vice President of Financial Planning at Financial Engines and co-host of Investing Sense. You can hear that right here on Twin Cities News Talk every Saturday at 1 p.m. Andy Smith, good morning, sir.
Hey,
good morning. We're doing fantastic. So it's been a volatile couple of days in the stock market. Give us sort of your headline version of what's been going on. What precipitated the drops that we saw on Monday and caused some of the gains that we saw yesterday?
Sure. So on Monday, we see three possible catalysts. One was kind of building. There was all the cryptocurrency, all the Bitcoin, Ripple, Ethereum. I mean, you saw losses of like $300 billion over the last couple of months. That builds up volatility-wise in the market. There was a one-word change or one word of interest in the latest release from the Federal Reserve, and it had to do with what they thought might be in store for interest rates and inflation. But most importantly, it was basically tied to these investments that they don't necessarily deal with stocks or bonds or cash or international stocks or anything else. They deal with the volatility that you see in the market. How much up, how much down, how hard up, how hard down. But they are computer-driven investments. And something went haywire on Monday, and that's what caused a lot of the volatility on Monday. Yesterday, you know, we saw the Dow 567 points higher. The S&P was higher by 600 points. So it's been a pretty interesting roller coaster here over the last couple of days.
Is it, and I know I'm asking a broad question here, Andy, but is it a good thing that the stock market functions so much on speculation and emotion? Is that ultimately a positive? Is that the only way that it can function?
No, I don't think it's the only way that it can function. I think that volatility, normal ups and downs, are good for the market. I mean, 2017 was an unusually calm year. Market drops, though, aren't unusual. I mean, we're supposed to have, on average, if you go back, you know, historically, we were supposed to have 5% drops about five times a year. We're supposed to have 10% drops about twice a year, but it's been like 19 months since the market had a 5% correction. So everybody was kind of lulled into this sense of complacency. They thought the markets were going to go up forever. Markets don't go up forever. What's interesting, or what was unusual about these last couple of days, was just the speed at which the correction or the movement occurred. But it's not it's not abnormal. It's just people forgot, people needed to act like they've been here before, but it's really hard when you think that the market goes up forever.
I saw some conversations or some speculation that there were some moves that were being made by private companies regarding health care for their employees that sort of scared the markets a little bit. Had you heard anything about that? Is there any fire to that smoke?
you know, I could throw a dead cat and hit about five ideas about what's going to happen, you know, or what the cause was in terms of, you know, there's like five guys who control the Bitcoin market. There's, you know, certain companies that are trying to do something with healthcare. The point is, when the market goes down, it means more people are selling than buying. When the market goes up, it means more people are buying than they are selling. But the point is, what people think they have to do when they see the market go down is they think they got to do something.
Right.
And that's not right. What people need to do is go back to, you know, hopefully some sort of long-term plan that they created during the good times that said, hey, look, Boyle, this is what you do when the market goes down. This is what you do when the market goes up. Don't forget this. The problem is people don't have a plan. People just think that they have to act on raw fear, and that's when they start blowing up their 401k.
Should anybody who hasn't gone to look at their investments or, you know, or maybe their 401ks or their own stocks, if they go and take a look at those now, are they going to be seeing any changes? How did the past few days affect the average individual that might have certain plans?
You know, it's hard to tell. It's based on how you're invested. What I like people to do is if you are working with an advisor, you know, go through that investment review with the advisor either on the phone or by your side, because the advisor can explain, look, this is what you're doing. This is what it means. This is what it means to your plan. The problem is a lot of times people will get into their 401ks first thing in the morning after, you know, looking on social media or reading, you know, whatever they're reading on the news, or they're looking at their 401k at the end of a long day and they're just tired, they're not thinking straight, and then there's no perspective with what they're seeing. I love the fact that you're getting in and looking at the investments and looking at your allocations and how much risk you're taking, but do it with somebody at your side who can explain what it means to your plan.
Well, Andy, that's exactly what happened to me. I looked at my 401k end of last week, and it was one number. And then after all this started happening earlier this week, I went back and looked, and it was a slightly different number.
And the thing is, it's like you're thinking, well, what the heck does this mean? Well, then if you're working with somebody, they can explain
right.
it, and they can say, look, it's okay, but this is what it means to your plan overall. You know, one investment over another isn't some magical and, you know, remedy for whatever's going to happen to your plan. You got to save. You got to have a plan. Hopefully you're working with somebody who can help you with both of those, because right now, these last couple of days, that really helps.
Is there any indication, anything you've seen over the last couple of days that's got you concerned about sort of the fundamentals of our economy? Is there anything out looming out there that you're specifically keeping your eye on?
Not really. I mean, the economic tailwinds that we saw in 2017 are still there. I mean, you've got 30% of the S&P reporting higher than estimated earnings. You've got three quarters of U.S. GDP growth that have been the best since 2014. Financial conditions are the most favorable they've been in 18 years. Jobless claims are the lowest they've been since 73. You know, everything is still in place. This was a market-driven event, not an economic-driven event. The problem is, if you're trading your 401k or IRA right now thinking that it is an economic event, you're going to blow yourself up later on, and you're not going to have time to fix the problems that are there.
Andy Smith, Senior Vice President of Financial Planning at Financial Engines, co-host of Investing Sense. So when the stock market has 2 days like this, is this like in your world equivalent of when President Donald Trump tweets something stupid to, or in our world?
Well, yeah, you kind of. You know, it's there's a lot of phone calls. There's a lot of emails. What happens is at some point you realize that everything's a circus. And if you can watch certain things on mute, if you can know that things aren't as good or as bad as either side wants you to believe, there's going to be demagoguery on both sides of the political aisle. I don't care who you are. You know, we're normal human beings. Our reality is somewhere in this gray middle. So if you can remind yourself that emotions don't necessarily matter as much as you think, politics don't matter as much as you may think, you have to focus on yourself and take care of your family long term. So yes, it's been an interesting ride. Yes, he will keep tweeting. Yes, the market is doing this. But it doesn't change what I'm doing for my family long term, because ultimately when I go home to my 9-year-old and 8-year-old, I don't care who's tweeting on social media, I got to take care of them over the next 40, 50
years. True story.
Andy Smith, co-host of Investing Sense. Again, you can hear that every Saturday right here on Twin Cities News Talk, 1 p.m. I would encourage listeners to go to financialengines.com. Find the time to talk with you got local advisors, Darren, Nate, Alex. They can answer your questions, look at your specific situations, and help you get a plan in place to deal with any future volatility, or if we just see continued growth, they've got some exciting options for you. Thanks for making some time for us this morning.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Take care.
GOP Chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan joins us next. GOP's Jeff Johnson, DFL's Tim Walz get wins in tests at Minnesota caucus meetings last night. Turnout not perhaps what people were hoping for? We'll get into all of it coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice in...
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice Andrews, Sam is... screening your phone calls at 651-989-5855. Just after 8 o'clock this morning, if you go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page, you can see this for yourself. But a Star Tribune reporter was given a photograph or the actual flyer itself, a print-up. And apparently a DFLer was saying that that an organizer had found pretty... I'll give you the quick thing. It says, "Dear immigrant scums."
Yeah, it's ridiculously fake.
Oh, it's absolutely fake. It's all the fake.
One of the fakest things I've ever seen.
It's so blatantly fake.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where you like the person that made it either... made it to make sure that everybody knew it was intentionally fake, or it's just so delusional to think that, well, if I make these little errors, it'll make it more real.
I mean,
I haven't decided which one it is.
It's lazy how fake it is.
So we'll get to that just after 8 o'clock.
Last night was caucus night around the state of Minnesota. Thousands of Minnesotans turning out to get the 2018 election cycle underway. Officially joining us now, Minnesota GOP Chair Jennifer Carnahan. Good morning. Doing fantastic. Thanks for joining us this morning. So how'd it go last night?
You know, it went very well. People came out to their local precinct caucuses, and the main activity of the night was voting in the governor's straw poll and then also running to be delegates. We were able to get 125 of all 125 precincts fully reporting on our side just shortly after 10:30 p.m. So we're really pleased with the organization and infrastructure and all the work that people did across the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, logistically, I mean, pulling off these caucuses is, it's a task. I mean, there's a lot of work and a lot of effort that goes into it from a lot of people. So it's good to hear that side of it all seems to appear to have gone pretty smoothly.
Yeah, hats off to the MNGOP staff for all the work they did, and a special hats off to all of our volunteers across the state to get people to turn up and convene these caucuses and prepare the packets and make sure everything runs smoothly. I mean, I just can't speak highly enough about all the incredible work that our activists and volunteers did around the state to make the process as easy and smooth as possible.
Let's talk a bit about the turnout. It is in the Star Tribune, a story with all the precincts reporting in. 11,000 Republicans had participated in the caucuses. However, that was down from 2010 and 2014. Any reading into that? Any thoughts on that? Of course, it's going to end up being a talking point when you look at the turnout on the DFL side. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, when you look at historically the numbers, as you mentioned, from 2010 now up to 2018, caucus attendance on the Republican side has been going down. However, it's still early in the campaign season. So as the candidates continue to campaign, I think the energy and excitement will continue to grow. And there's definitely on our end, there's still a lot of movement in candidates. Who's going to get in? Who's going to get out? So that probably is a factor in it. On the DFL side, they always have a higher attendance than us.
Right.
And I don't think that is any type of answer on the enthusiasm and energy and what's going to happen in November.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people sort of lamenting the turnout. And you know, it's not that there isn't reason to be concerned, but comparing, you know, your GOP turnout to your DFL turnout isn't necessarily the best gauged you. I mean, it's kind of a Democrat majority state and has been. And you're right. Historically, they always have more turnout on the GOP side or on the DFL side more often than not anyway. Jeff Johnson did fantastic in the straw poll, almost 5,000 votes, tripling, you know, almost tripling the competitors. Undecided coming in second with 1,700. Keith Downey at 1,590. Were you surprised at all at the at these results? Or did you expect it to maybe be a little closer?
You know, if you look at the results for the straw poll last night and then look at State Central, which is a smaller body, which happened in early December for our party, the votes kind of aligned in a similar fashion to what they did. So, you know, it just, again, is a testament to the candidates and the support that they're picking up from our grassroots activists and the core of the Republican Party and the base and how they've continued to drive around the state and work.
Moving, looking ahead. Well, I'm looking ahead from last night. Do you take anything away from last night that maybe you didn't have before going into the evening, based off the results, based off of who you saw and who you talked to?
You know, I don't have any different takeaways from what I've been seeing as I've been driving around the state all for the past year either. Again, you know, our candidates are all out there working hard. You know, as I had mentioned earlier, you know, our field, you know, people may be getting in still, people may be dropping out, so there's still a lot of movement there. I think it just goes to show that, you know, our process is one that's a little bit longer, and as things ramp up closer to our state convention in June, and then we get past the primary into the general election in November, you know, enthusiasm will continue to grow and we'll continue to see candidates out there working hard.
Well, let's talk about the, you know, the possibility of people getting in. Obviously, the big story these last several days, last week or so, has been the specter of Tim Pawlenty sort of hanging over this governor's race. He left his job, and a lot of people, myself included, seem to be under the impression that he is seriously considering or has possibly even already decided that he's going to make another run for governor. Have you heard anything to that effect? Are you hearing any chatter that gets you to lean one direction or the other? And what does a Tim Pawlenty entry do to shake up this governor's race?
Yeah, you know, my personal philosophy on things is, regardless of what chatter might be going on out there, until someone gets in, I don't believe they're in until they formally get in the race. At the Republican Party of Minnesota, we certainly invite and welcome anyone and everyone who has an interest in running for any type of campaign or race in the state of Minnesota. I mean, we are a party that likes to give people choice. We like to have more candidates. It makes the field more robust. So that is important. Whether or not Governor Pawlenty gets in remains to be seen. If he gets in, he's certainly a respected figure, former governor, and did a lot of good for the state. We just, as at the Republican Party, you know, really stand behind the endorsement. So we encourage anyone and everyone who gets in to really go for that endorsement and follow the endorsement process, because it is so important in our party.
Any resolutions that get passed last night that you were either, you know, extremely proud of or surprised by at these various caucuses?
You know, I haven't gotten all the final details on resolutions that were brought forward. We were working in the war room until, you know, well past 11 p.m., just trying to make sure that we got all the results in so we could get that out to all of Minnesota today. So we'll get on top of that this morning when we get back in the office.
And one last question before we let you go. I'm just curious of your thoughts on this, because we've never talked about it all the times we've had you on. Every time that we have a caucus night in Minnesota, there's always a group of people that are sort of complaining about the caucus process, and they call it exclusionary. They say that, you know, unless you're if you're someone who works nights or maybe has small children, it's hard to participate in the caucus process. Do you have any opinion or any stance on the efficiency or efficacy of caucuses in general? Do you like the process, or do you think maybe we would be better served as a state if we moved more in a primary direction?
I don't think the caucus process is exclusionary, because if caucus were to be held on a weekend, for example, it would still be difficult for a lot of people to get there, right? Because families have activities for their children, or they're traveling or whatnot. So there probably never is a best day to hold caucus. I actually think caucus is pretty important for Minnesota, because it allows everyday people to get out there and get involved in their parties. And if it weren't for the caucus process, I wouldn't be the chair of the party today, and I never would have gotten involved. I certainly can admit that for people that have never been before or haven't been involved for many years, it could seem intimidating as an outsider looking in. But, you know, the caucus I was at last night, there was a woman that showed up for the first time ever, and everybody was welcoming and friendly, and we walked her through the process. So, you know, all people have to do is show up. Showing up is the first step. If you don't show up, it's hard to have a say in the process beyond just voting in a general election in November.
Jennifer Carnahan, chair of the Minnesota GOP, thanks for giving us some time this morning. Always a pleasure to have you on.
A pleasure to be here. Have a great day.
Congratulations on a successful caucus and well-run caucus evening.
Thank you both.
Take care.
Out of the Pioneer Press, several student groups at the University of Minnesota working for months with the police there, administrators, to bring well-known conservative commentator Ben Shapiro to campus for a speaking event. They're now expressing disappointment, however, after being relegated to a venue on the St. Paul campus, not the main campus in Minneapolis, and worry that fears of protests are denying them equal time and space for conservative views. And look, and they're right to do so. When you work through the story here of what's taken place, it's clear, despite what some of the university spokespeople are saying, it's clear that the whole reason they're doing this is because they're moving it around because they're trying to avoid the protest.
They're afraid.
And they should just have it where they want to have it and then hold people accountable and deal with the consequences. And yet fear, as you just said, fear is what the motivating factor and what's driving these particular decisions being made.
Yeah, they're afraid of the leftist activists. They're afraid of the Antifa crowd. They're afraid of what they will do if they dare allow a conservative to talk.
Evan,
that's all he's going to do.
That's all that it is.
He's going to go there. He's going to talk.
Right. Words. Yeah. That's all that it is. Evan Lapiska, he's the U spokesperson, says, I think the assertion that we're moving it for ideological reasons is patently untrue.
You're a liar.
The end goal is to ensure public safety and to allow the event to actually take place. But
yeah, but the ideological reasons are at the core of that.
Exactly.
You know, the ideological positions that Ben Shapiro takes are at the core of why you're concerned for public safety. What you need to do is let him speak. Let him speak at the venue that they booked him at, and tell all these leftist groups that want to come out here and cause trouble to stay home, because this is the First Amendment. This is political speech. This is protected by the Constitution. They're allowed to do this.
You had Students for a Conservative Voice, Collegians for a Constructive Tomorrow, Minnesota Students for Liberty, a libertarian group who started making preparations for Shapiro's speech in October, but one by one, the more centrally located venues were denied. I think we tried just about every building on this campus with a large enough venue. We just started working our way down in capacity, said Ted Mann Concert Hall. And starting with Ted Mann Concert Hall, getting progressively smaller. That's according to Madison Dibble, president of the Students for Conservative Voice. Ted Mann had a scheduling conflict. The West Bank Hall had too many entrances. And it was too close to light rail. U officials feared it would be shut down by protesters, according to Dibble. The East Bank Auditorium was connected to the University Hospital, and the possibility of locking down hospital entrances was a deal breaker. Over half a dozen venues were explored, said Dibble. And in the end, they settled on the North Star Ballroom in the Student Center of the St. Paul campus, which is essentially in Falcon Heights. When the venue was announced in late January, Dibble said the event sold out within 24 hours with 725 requests for 400 seats. And again, they're only doing this because they don't want to have to deal with the protesters don't even have to protest and they get what they want.
Yep.
They don't even have to show up.
That's the culture that they have created on college campuses, on universities all around the country. The threat of violence, the threat of a violent reaction to having a conservative speak on a college campus is enough to get these administrations shaking in their boots and moving it around. And what it's essentially done, I mean, it's really silenced a lot of conservative voices. It's silenced alternative dissenting voices that you might find on college campuses.
It's Ben Shapiro.
I know.
Look, I have no beef with Ben Shapiro at all, but It's Ben Shapiro.
He's not some fire-breathing dragon.
No.
out there causing harm with his dangerous words.
Yeah, he's like a young Danny DeVito of conservative talk in terms of threat. Right? I mean, nobody's threatened by Danny DeVito. You know, it's Ben Shapiro, for crying out loud. He's just a dude. Just a little dude.
In October, U police had to use pepper spray to break up three fights outside an event on the West Bank campus featuring Lauren Southern, a Canadian political commentator. Hundreds of protesters showed up. One was arrested. Dibble says, overall, the U of M does a good job ensuring these events happen compared to some other universities around the nation. But even still, this shouldn't even be a conversation.
Right.
We shouldn't be having these conversations about moving it around and finding some places in the issue of public safety when you're talking about a speech. That's all you're talking about.
Well, in the sake of fairness, Drew, let's remind ourselves of all the times when the DFL or progressives on campus have invited, their speakers, and the right wing protesters have forced them to go and move to different. Wait, hold on. Sam's informed that hasn't happened. Oh, Sam's, yeah. Sam's telling me she doesn't. That's there's no stories because that hasn't happened. Shapiro has met with protesters at many engagements, according to the story. Most notoriously, in September, he spoke at the University of California, Berkeley campus. 9 protesters were arrested. Now they're talking about cost. The university charged hosting the student organization $9,162 for security costs and subsequently said they had to incur $600,000 in overall costs after shutting down large swaths of the campus for the event. The university charged the hosting student organization, right? The controversial commentator Ben Shapiro was the editor-in-chief at the time of Breitbart News. Look, I don't care. It doesn't matter.
None of it matters.
It's not an excuse.
The fact that all that matters is he's a conservative. That's all they care about.
Yeah.
The fact that he was one of the most vocal anti-Trump critics during the election, they don't care. He's still a conservative. So therefore, he's still a fascist. He's still part of the alt-right. Wait, he didn't support Donald Trump, and he's Jewish. So it doesn't fit really with, they don't care. It's like facts do not matter to these people. They want to shut down and silence any conservative voice on their campus.
A spokesperson for Young America's Foundation, Spencer Brown, kind of says it best. Virginia-based nonprofit organizes Shapiro's appearances, noted that the discussion inside the venues is typically polite. It's fine to be concerned about security, but the answer is not to sequester and punish conservatives, Brown said. The answer is to protect and their exercise of First Amendment rights. Yeah, it's unfortunate, and it is part of the culture, and you're right. The protesters win in this regard, and you end up giving them way more power than they end up deserving. You know, the one in here that kind of stuck out to me was one of these locations. The East Bank Mayo Memorial Auditorium was connected to the U Hospital. The possibility of locking down the hospital entrances was a deal breaker. I get that, but the argument, in my opinion, is let it go on, and let's see if the protesters actually go and do that, because they're going to lose a lot of credibility if they end up doing, but we'll never know because they won't allow it to happen.
Yeah, we've got a few people that want to chime in on this. Stay on the line. We will get to your calls. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Also use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. More Justice and Drew coming up. Justice.